Save money and energy like a boss. Find ideas and incentives for your facility from the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program at comed.com/likeaboss.
Hello.
Football on ESPN 1000.
Hello, Bert.
Albert Breer.
Hey, Bert.
Senior NFL writer for SI.com joins Cap'n Jay Hood.
Bert's it.
What?
You're it, Bert.
On ESPN 1000.
What do you mean I'm it?
We see, that's the game. I just tagged you, and you're it until you tag somebody else.
Albert Breer.
No, I'm not playing a game. I'm reading, Ernie, and I'm not it.
Okay.
On Chicago's home for sports.
But Bert is it.
All right, Albert Breer joins us every Tuesday throughout the football season. And he's brought to you by Valparaiso University, where I'll be tomorrow. I've got Loyola at Valpo tomorrow night. Looking forward to that game.
That'll be very interesting.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. Good matchup. Albert, good morning. Let's start with Patrick Mahomes. Do you have any insight on, are they expecting him to be ready to play, or it's still up in the air?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to play the game during the week, but I think he's ready. I think he'll be ready to go. I talked to some people who were with him after the game that said it looked like he was going to be okay. He was in good spirits. I mean, I think you guys saw he actually tweeted at Chad Henne, I think while the game was still going on, right? So, you always want to take these things seriously, of course, and it is to be taken seriously. But I'd actually sort of heard that the next thing that he had, the next thinger, was actually a bigger deal than any sort of head injury he suffered. So I think they feel pretty confident that he's going to be all right and ready to go. Of course, first day of practice for the championship games tomorrow, so we'll see if he's out there.
Albert, can you take us behind the scenes of the Houston Texans and Cal McNair, the culture of the Texans, and why are we here this morning wondering where Deshaun Watson's going to be?
Oh, you guys have all day?
Yes.
It is a train wreck of a dumpster fire of a travesty. It's just unbelievable how far this thing has gone, field. And I would say it starts with ownership. I think really, since the power went from, obviously Bob McNair and he passes away to his son Cal, things have really changed in that organization. And I think more than anything else, because you don't have strong ownership, there's everybody reaching for power, and that's why you've had power struggle after power struggle. And so, where things are right now with Jack Easterby, having survived the firing of Brian Gain, the firing of Bill O'Brien having survived the firing of Rick Smith, you really have just, an organization that's, I think needs to very, very clearly define its direction. And until they have a head coach in place, it's going to be really hard for them to do that. And so I'm not dodging the operative question here, which is what happens with Deshaun Watson. I'm sure people in Chicago are very interested in the answer to that question. I think until we know who the head coach is, it's going to be hard to answer that. And honestly, I think Nick Caserio, one of the guys who came up within the business was Josh McDaniels, who got his first shot at being in charge in Denver. And we saw what happened to Jay Cutler's situation there. And Josh was gone less than 2 years later. So, I think it's a delicate situation right now. I do think that Nick Caserio and Cal McNair and Jack Easterby and all the guys in that building are of a mind to go forward with Deshaun Watson as the quarterback. But Deshaun Watson's obviously going to have a say in that, and we'll see how hard he wants to push. And, and I think, of course, a huge part of this is whoever the head coach is and what sort of feeling the head coach has on which way this thing should go.
So Dan Orlovsky said, in his opinion, there is zero chance that Deshaun Watson will ever play for the Houston Texans again. There are people in our town go, well, why would he want to come here after Ryan Pace passed him? For me, A, Chicago's an insane market for his brand. It's a city where, we've had our share of issues in our city, and he could be such a linchpin to healing so many people. And what an ultimate trump card to go, you had to give up how many number one picks to get me back? That's why I think there is a chance if the Bears will pay the price. What would that price be?
pretty heavy. I mean, what'd you pay for Jay Cutler? Whatever that is.
Two ones, Kyle Orton, and a three.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably somewhere in that neighborhood. And look, part of it's going to depend on where your one is. You know, like if the Bears are bidding against the Jets and the Dolphins, the Jets and the Dolphins have the second and third overall picks in the draft. So the Texans can look at those teams and legitimately say, well, you know, if we trade with these teams, then there's a very, very easy path to replacing Deshaun Watson on our roster. Whereas if we're trading with the Bears, and I think the Bears have, what, the 20th pick or the 19th pick, right?
20. Something like that. Yeah, 20th pick.
The 20th pick, yeah. So if you're trading the 20th pick, that's something else entirely.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no guarantee any of the quarterbacks would be left.
Except,
you know?
So, Albert, if he says, I'm only going to Chicago, get what you can, but I am not going anywhere else, or whatever the
city
is.
Why would he do that, though? I mean, like, I understand what you're saying. No, and I think there's value in playing for a historic franchise, right? Mm-hmm. But what connection does he have to anybody in the Bears organization that would make you think he would do that?
No, I'm saying seriously. To any team, if he says, I'm only playing in Minnesota, whatever the franchise is, he could stick it to them and go, I got a no-trade.
And you're right, he has a no-trade clause, so the no-trade clause does give him the power to do that. I'm playing devil's advocate here. I don't know why. I mean, like, look, and I love Chicago. You know, I went to school in the Midwest, so, you know, and I think playing for an iconic franchise like the Bears would definitely have some appeal. It's also not a startup, you know, so to speak. Like, you know, going to the Jets would be sort of being part of a startup. So it does have some things going for it, but I do think that if Deshaun was going to do something like that, right, where he was going to point to a franchise and say, get me there, right? I'm not going anywhere else. Get me there. There would have to be some sort of personal connection to someone in the organization, whether it's the head coach, the offensive coordinator, whoever it is, there would have to be some sort of personal connection there. And I'm not sure I quite see any sort of connection that strong with the Bears to Deshaun.
I think one of the reasons for that, Cap, is because Deshaun Watson has good working Wi-Fi and can read. That's why Chicago wouldn't be a destination.
Probably not.
Do you foresee Eric Bieniemy being a head coach in the NFL next year?
No. I think if he had one shot the whole time, I thought it was Houston. And I thought this from the start, and then they don't put in the request for him, which is weird, which is a huge reason why this thing went sideways. But guys, I just sort of think this was going this way for like the last month or so, and it's unfortunate. It sucks. I mean, I think he's earned his shot, but this is the way it goes sometimes. And there are lots of guys out there who, you know, who have earned the shot, who have earned themselves onto these lists and haven't gotten the opportunity. You know, Pete Carmichael is a good example. You know, if you want to put him up against Bieniemy, he's been the Saints offensive coordinator for the last 12 years, hasn't become a head coach, has a lot of the same things on his resume, a Super Bowl championship. He's worked with the Hall of Fame quarterback. He's, you know, the coordinator of a very, very, you know, forward-thinking and innovative offense. And he's working under a generational offensive coach in New Orleans. The two coordinators in Baltimore, you know, Wink Martindale and Greg Roman, both very successful. They haven't gotten their shot. So I think too often we focus on, you know, single candidates. These jobs are really, really difficult to win. And it's sort of a needle in a haystack type of thing. So, you know, it sucks for him, you know, but I don't think that this is something that people around the NFL didn't see coming 4 or 6 weeks ago. In fact, I know there were some people at the league office that were sort of, I guess, concerned ahead of time that this might go down this way.
Yeah, again, there are a lot, like, Ryan Pace is here, needed to hire a head coach. He worked with Pete Carmichael. There's got to be some reason that guy's
right.
Still sitting there, nor doesn't interview well, or whatever the reason is. But I just look at a guy like Eric Bieniemy. If he's the right candidate, I keep hearing people say, like NFL Network, I was listening to the radio coming in one day, and they said, you got to get the guy hired so you get your staff in. But if Eric Bieniemy's the right guy, I'm waiting. It's not like this is recruiting where I can't get players. I don't understand that rationale. Well, if you go to the Super Bowl, I can't get you.
I would say this year's a little different, though, just because you can't get to the guys in person until their teams are out of the playoffs. So I think this year, from that standpoint, is a little different than previous years. And I think the guys that are still in the playoffs are always at a disadvantage, but I think maybe even a little bit more of a disadvantage this year. The reason why, I have somebody who's making one of these decisions with one of these teams, like a team president type, who said to me a week ago, am I really going to hire somebody that I haven't met in person? And I thought that was a really good point. You know, like, as much as we've all learned to do this, right, and to, I mean, you guys have, I have, I think everybody in America at this point has learned how to have meetings, how to, function on work over Zoom instead of doing things in person over the last 10 months. And, like, this is, I know those are big checks you're writing to these people. Are you really willing to hire somebody sight unseen like that, you know? And so I think this year there was an extra layer of it. And not to say it's impossible. It's not, you know. I mean, look, there are, you know, Terry Fontenot got hired by Atlanta, or at least was picked by Atlanta to be their general manager without having, you know, been in the building with the Falcons people. So it's not like it didn't happen at all. But I can certainly see where, you know, the whole Zoom thing, I think, did add another layer that made it even more challenging for guys whose teams are still playoff.
So are you telling me that whoever the person is that's making this hire, whether that's Cal McNair, Jack Easterby, Nick Caserio, whoever it is for Houston, they can't say, Eric, I am going to quarantine. I'm going to take a COVID test. We're going to take a private jet after 3 days after my COVID test is negative. I will be waiting at a hotel. You're coming out of the protocol, so you don't have COVID. And let's mask up, whatever we got to do, sit in a big conference room. So, I need a few hours to meet with you.
So I'll give you guys a great example of the league doing that for someone, okay? And I do think that it's possible you could do that. And I think the league has actually been somewhat reasonable on these things. Ryan Poles is a young executive with the Chiefs, right? And so he was a finalist for the job in Carolina. They identified four finalists, and Ryan Poles actually had COVID a month and a half ago, okay? And he and his people called the league office and said, listen, I've got 5 weeks of negative tests for you. I tested positive for the antibodies. I had COVID a month and a half ago. I'm completely clean. Now, he works for the Chiefs, just like Eric Bieniemy. And the league cleared him to fly to Carolina to go interview for that job, to do the second interview for that job as a finalist for the Panthers GM job. Now, he didn't get it, but the point is the league did allow for that. So at least with an executive, they've done that. Now, it might be a little bit more sensitive with a coach for obvious reasons, because the coach is going to be around the players and everything else. But I do see what you're saying, and I do think if the Texans said, hey, listen, if we can do this, we're probably going to hire this guy, the league actually might try to work with the Texans on something like that.
Albert, make us smarter. Something in your phone that you could tell us about that you haven't told anyone else?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that you guys really, I'll put it this way. I think next week is an important week for the draft, a way more important week than most people out there realize. Now, Senior Bowl is always a big event. The idea here, and this is going to be an interesting event because it's the first All-Star game since the, COVID, everything started with COVID 10 months ago in any sport in North America. So basically, they're going to have about 130, 140 players there in Mobile, Alabama, and teams are anticipating that that's going to be the only chance that they have to go face-to-face with prospects and interview prospects in person through this entire draft cycle. So if you guys think about that, like normally they'd be able to go see them at the combine, they'd be able to go on campus and visit with them, they'd be able to bring them into their buildings, and because of COVID protocols right now, it looks like next week in Mobile, Alabama, at the Senior Bowl is going to be the only time they're going to have a chance to go face-to-face with all these prospects. So what has that meant functionally? Devontae Smith, the Heisman Trophy winner, dislocated his finger. He won't be participating next week in the Senior Bowl, but he's actually going to be on one of the teams as like sort of an honorary member, and he's going so he can go and sit down with the different teams. Trey Sermon dislocated his collarbone in the championship game. Ohio State running back, he's going because he is going to have the chance as part of one of the teams, though he's injured, to go and visit with all the teams. Landon Dickerson, the center from Alabama, torn ACL, he's going, so he can sit down and interview with all the teams. So next week is an ultra important week for all of these teams, because it may be the only chance that they have ahead of the draft 3 months from now to go face-to-face with all of these kids.
Albert, have a great day. We'll talk to you next week.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
See you, buddy. All right, we hold Danny's feet to the fire on why he was late to work. That's right. He overslept. That's next.
Scratch your morning sports itch.
This is Cap and Jay Hood, our new morning show.
On ESPN 1000 and the new ESPN Chicago app.
So, Hoodie and I walk in this morning, got our coffee, ready for our meeting, ready to have Danny be his usual charming self. You can hear him seven blocks away, but we love him. I walk in, it's unusually quiet in our conference room,
yes,
where we sit socially distanced, and Meller goes, "Have you talked to Danny?" "No." And he's like, "Well, he's not here. And he's not answering his phone. It's going right to voicemail. And we're a little concerned." I'm like, "Well, I'll call him." Right to voicemail. JR's like, "Yeah, I texted him and it's going green, which means the phone's not even on." I'm like, "That's odd." So I called Diana. Thank goodness I had her number. She got back to me. I woke up and Danny was fast asleep. And his phone shut off.
For all that, I'm checking the tweets.
Yeah.
So he hasn't tweeted in about 12 hours. And I sent him the show note and everything. And
fully thinking, oh, God, was there like a CO2 leak before she called?
I'm just thinking, you know, man, I got to be prepared for whatever, right? I don't know what's happening. I don't know what the call's going to be.
Well, you had already written out, Danny was a really good producer. We're going to miss him on the show.
I had a yellow pad page ready saying, "I'm going to miss the gray hat."
Yeah.
I'm going to miss the gray hat.
Danny's basically on air open.
I'm going to miss the gray hat. I'm going to miss the health tips. He was helping me. And
I had so many thoughts running through my head. Yeah. I was like, man, he lived such a healthy life. All for naught.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think I collected the $200 fantasy football entry fee that he owes me.
Oh, I'm going to miss the tone. The tone he would have. Hoodie, get ready. Hoodrow. No more Hoodrow. No more Hoodrow. No more Athletic Greens. No more tips on fruits and vegetables.
The world is one less healthier person, we thought.
I just, you know, and I had it ready. I had the bullet points ready.
He did.
Because you just can't do off the top of your head. I mean, you find out that kind of information. If Danny's dead, we got to make sure we're ready.
He even said to me, "Do you think Diana was going to ask me to give a eulogy?"
Oh, God.
I said, I don't know.
So, I mean, you know, Danny always wanted to make sure I was ready, so I was prepared for my bullet points on Danny. You know, we met each other 15 years ago at the score. I remember it very, I had it ready. I just, I'm just so glad that he turned the corner and the gray hat was here.
Hi, Danny.
Gentlemen, I apologize to you guys. I'm sorry. This is, in the 15 years I've been coming to work here at ESPN 1000, this is the first time this ever happened to me, and I am blaming Apple and...
And Diana.
No, Diana saved me. I am blaming Diana a little bit. Here's what happened, right? Here's what happened.
Wow.
I have the iPhone, and I set three alarms every day. The first alarm goes off at 3:40. The second one's scheduled for 3:42. The third one's scheduled for 3:46. I set them before bed. I put the phone down on the nightstand, and I go to sleep. I don't sleep well, so I toss and turn all night. But I have one rule. When I toss and turn, I don't look at the time. Because if you look at the time and it's 3 o'clock, then you're never going back to sleep. Because you're saying to yourself, oh, man, the alarm's going off in 40 minutes. Also, that blue light in the middle of the night is supposed to make it harder to go to sleep. So that's my rule. I will not look at the clock. So I'm laying there, and I'm tossing and turning and tossing and turning and thinking to myself, at some point, this alarm's going to go off. And then all of a sudden, I hear my beautiful wife's voice, "Did you sleep in today?" And I'm like, "What do you mean, did I sleep in?" And she's like, "It's 6:10. And I started cussing like a sailor. I picked up my phone, and I started hitting it to see what time it is, and the phone was completely black, like it was off. So the phone, between when I placed it down on the nightstand and when it was supposed to go off, shut itself off. I'm blaming Apple in that new update. I just did the update on Saturday.
So did I. My phone went off.
Listen, Cap, you know me. You can set your clock to me. I'm in the same place at the same time every day. I eat the same meal at the same time every day.
He does.
I am a human clock.
So can you understand why we thought you were dead?
Yes, of course. And I was driving in. I heard Hoodie doing his obituary for me. I appreciated most of it.
Hey,
most of it, I appreciate.
Most of it was all good.
You got the years wrong. We met at the Score in 02, 03.
Oh, wow.
That's more than 15 years ago. Don't cut us short.
Oh, that's true.
First two or three weren't very memorable, apparently.
No. Yeah, because I knew I was being fired.
Danny.
Not by me. Not by me.
So wait. So Di woke you up at what time? 6:10?
6:10. Her alarm went off at 6:10 because she had an early appointment, an early meeting today, right? Yeah.
Good thing she knows how to set an alarm.
Well, her phone, to get into my wife, her phone, she refuses to do the update because she's got this craziness that if she does an update, she'll lose all her pictures. And she's got all the pictures of the kids. No. So she hasn't done an update in 6 years. Oh, and now she's patting herself on the back like the smart one. See, you did the update. Your phone shut off.
Oh, wait a minute, though. Here's the thing. So she woke you up at 6:10.
Correct.
Your phone was off. You were trying to get it to turn back on. Meanwhile, I did not text our boss's concern until 6:19.
Mm-hmm. All I know is Cap.
JR texted you. We were calling you nonstop because your phone was off.
Oh, I saw the text come through.
How about a phone call and an update to us?
No, when I got out of bed, I freaked out. I got out of bed and I ran into the bathroom to get ready. Obviously, I got to brush my teeth, get myself ready to come to work. And I said, can you please call Cap back? And she called Cap back.
What time? But she didn't call. Then it was later than 6:10.
Let me see what time
because
Diana
she didn't call,
called me.
Because, yeah, she did not call until probably 6:30-ish.
So I started writing my eulogy around 6:15. That's around.
So maybe her alarm went off at 6:10. Maybe she didn't wake me immediately.
Okay.
I don't know.
Called me at 6:34.
Yeah, so there's a 20-minute interval there
we were literally thinking... Is he going to Pizer Weinstein? Is he getting cream? Like, what's going on here?
The boss came in, Mike Thomas. He's like, if we hadn't heard from you by Showtime, the Glenview police were going to your house.
That's
right.
True.
They actually were going to send Merkin, but he's not strong enough to break the window. So
Merkin was aware of this. I didn't hear from Merkin. Like, are you okay or anything?
Everybody here
reached out to me. Merkin, nothing.
I was going to actually, Mindy was going to go there.
I have since, I could, because in between, before you called us back, I let Merck know that we had heard from Diana, so.
See, I have the technology on my phone to broadcast from my phone if there's ever a problem. Mm-hmm. So I was going to drive to Danny's house and broadcast, still do the show with you, but drive out there just
do it from his front yard.
Just give you an eyewitness news report there, you know? Give you a little Terrell Brown. Be right out there, right out front.
Behind me is the home of Daniel Zetterman.
I mean, it's scary stuff because when it goes right to voicemail and it's almost showtime, then you think the worst. Like, what happened there?
Right.
Right? So it scared me. I'll be honest.
Well, I appreciate the concern.
I was very scared.
You know, I felt like Ebenezer Scrooge for a minute where I got to see the ghost of Christmas future. Like, so I was dead and you guys were all remembering me. And I appreciate it. I thought Cap maybe would have been a little bit more choked up. Like, I expected tears from Cap.
No shot.
He's good with those. I thought maybe, you know, Hoodie, I felt a nice eulogy.
Yeah, it was right here, written, ready to go.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what to expect, so you always got to be ready, right?
Got to be ready.
And so you weren't here for the meeting. The meeting was, you know, Cap talking about Cap, of course. Danny, he's not here. Can you believe this John Lester thing? No shot. I'm going to drill them today.
Well,
Sparky.
Speaking of John Lester, I'm driving in, and I hear you guys talking about John Lester, and you're making it personal. And I didn't understand why this is like the Cubs treating John Lester crappy.
They
I want to talk to you about that.
They absolutely did.
They're broke. They just can't afford him. It's not personal. They're broke.
They made an offer as soon as he got another offer after telling him when he reached out to the owner. Yeah, we can't make any offers right now.
Maybe they didn't have the money at the time when the Nationals made the offer, the money came free.
It was called cover your ass. So if anyone says, did any of the Cubs make an offer? Well, yeah, after I already got the offer, when he called them and said, what do you want to pay me? $3 million? Let's just get a deal done. I don't want to go anywhere else.
They had to try to look for the money. Was it in some kind of secret treasure chest? Was it in the bags of Crown Royal? but it's the empty bed. Just found some millions for him. If Theo's here, Lester's a Cub at least for one more year. You can just tell things are changing over there. And in our next segment, we'll talk about why Tyler Chatwood's no longer here with the Cubs. That also tells a story. Oh, wait a minute.
He's a Blue Jay.
All right. 5 years, 55 for him? Or for the Blue Jays? No?
Yeah.
Is that same deal?
Yeah, exactly.
We'll play Shot or No Shot coming up next.
Take that.
Cap and Jay Hood. Mornings.
ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. That's why I
say amen, I Shot. No Shot. With Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. That's why I say
amen, I Hey, Shot, No Shot is brought to you by PointsBet. PointsBet Sportsbook is here. Visit us at Hawthorne Racecourse and experience Illinois' premium sportsbook. But first, download the PointsBet app and get $100 in free bets when you deposit $20 with this code ESPN. Fans, you could submit your best shot or no shot every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You got to include the hashtag shot or no shot and tweet and follow ESPN 1000. Best submissions will be read on the air on Friday, and that will be the winner that Danny chooses. Winner will receive $100 in Club Hawthorne mobile app wagers and $100 in PointsBet Sportsbook app wagers. Danny!
Gentlemen!
I'm glad you're alive, Danny.
Thank you, Cap. I do appreciate that. Thought maybe you'd get a little choked up, but all right, it is what it is.
Not really.
So let's begin. John Lester, I know you guys spent a lot of time talking about him this morning. He found a new home. He signed a one-year deal yesterday with the Washington Nationals. He's going to join Kyle Schwarber and former Cubs bench coach Dave Martinez. So I ask you guys, shot or no shot, the Cubs will retire number 34 in John Lester's honor.
Shot, because it can be him. Look, Kerry Wood is not going to get his number retired in and of itself. But when you add in the 20 strikeout game, his place in Cubs lore, and then John Lester, they could very easily say no one's ever pitching in 30 or wearing 34 again. So shot.
I also say shot. Yeah, but you know, Wood and Lester, can they both be retired with the same number?
Maddox Fergie did.
Yeah. So I say shot for both.
You think Kerry Wood deserves to have his number retired?
Not in and of himself.
No, but I'm saying, like, if they raise 34. You know, and they retire 34. Why do they have to include Kerry Wood?
Well, I
love Kerry Wood. He's one of my favorite Cubs of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But without John Lester's 34 going up, we would never even suggest Kerry Wood's would.
Yeah, I think you could retire it and put Lester at the top and then underneath Kerry 20K or something like that and pay tribute that way. They do have a Kerry Wood flag that flies on the roof of the stadium with the 20K on it. So, yeah, I think they could do something like that. Or they could just do it for John.
Okay, so I'm trying to think. The Cubs numbers that are retired from that era, who's that?
From the
Dusty Baker.
I don't think anybody.
So nobody.
Other than Maddox.
Here are the Cubs have five numbers retired: Ron Santo, yep.
10;
Ernie Banks, Ryan Sandberg, Billy Williams, and number 31 shared by Fergie and Maddox.
There you go. And if you really want to look at it and be fair, Maddox is one of the five greatest pitchers ever.
Yeah.
Not for what he did in a Cub uniform. He won a Cy Young and left, and then won like 40 more Cy Youngs all in Atlanta. And then came back here, and he was just okay.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, I mean, he could have been a great Cub if it wasn't for Herm Strid as his pitching coach.
Correct.
So
isn't that the Pirates guy?
Yes, but he's the first big, pitching coach for the Cub.
Big hat.
Yes. You know, so that delves into just one other question. So you don't think Kerry Wood should be revered at all?
Kerry Wood, and I know our boss hates this, but Kerry Wood is on my Mount Rushmore of favorite Cub players of all time.
Yeah.
But I do not think his body of work, aside from the 20 strikeout game, which is a moment,
mm-hmm.
he does not deserve to have number 34 retired, especially when we're talking about just five other Cubs who have that number retired. So, you know, they're... If you're going to talk past John Lester getting his jersey retired, I think we all agree he deserves it.
Yeah.
But then the question comes down to who else on that 2016 team would get their jersey retired? I mean, I think Cap will say Rizzo, no matter what's going to get his jersey retired. Does Chris Bryant deserve it one day?
No.
No. Ungrateful.
Absolutely not.
He won Rookie of the Year. He won Rookie of the Year MVP and led them to a World Series.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, that's more significant than 20 strikeouts, and you're willing to raise Kerry Woods.
Well, I'm only doing it because Lester's getting it retired, but you could put on the bottom of it, you know, the 34 Wood 20K. I mean, you could.
What about
also,
Joe Maddon?
Also worn by.
What about Joe yes. Maddon? Doesn't he deserve some kind of honor?
Yes.
Probably right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. So your initial question, yes, Lester should have his number retired. Lester, Kerry Wood, Steve Trout. 34. Put them all up there. Exactly. Steve Trout from 84.
Exactly.
All right, Danny.
All right, gentlemen, let's move on to your Chicago Bears. Brian Perez of the Bears Wire tweeted over the weekend a link to linking Allen Robinson to Lamar Jackson in the Baltimore Ravens after the Ravens lost this weekend. He tweeted, "The Ravens should just hand Allen Robinson a blank check. He's everything Lamar needs in 2021. Sure enough, even though Allen Robinson was not tagged in the post, he liked the post. So I ask you guys, most of us assume Allen Robinson wants out of here, but shot or no shot, the Chicago Bears cannot afford to lose Allen Robinson this offseason and must back the Brinks truck up to retain him."
Yeah, no shot. First of all, he's a hell of a player. He's not, in my opinion, a top 10. Oh, my God, I have to break the Brinks truck. Cap's coming down. Your offense isn't good enough. You don't have a quarterback, and you got the second oldest defense. And he wants Keenan Allen money, 4 for $84. Tag him and trade him and get some assets back.
Is $12 million in the – what's in the Brinks truck? Is $12 million in there, $12 to $15
million? No, Keenan Allen money at least.
Oh, okay, well, then no shot. Sorry. And you know, just the tenor of the press conference made me think that, boy, they're really into Mooney as, like, the next guy. And, my God, if I wanted Marty Booker to be
– yeah.
Just, like, you know, just I it's too bad. But here's the thing. If I'm Allen Robinson as a businessman, I'm looking at this and saying, well, who's the quarterback? I do not want to be Larry Fitzgerald up in here. There's no shot at Larry Fitzgerald, just that Larry, no matter who the quarterback is, he's staying in Arizona, right?
Right.
No matter how much they pay him, like, yep, this is where I want to be. Allen Robinson still got good football to give,
mm-hmm.
but he wants to be with an upper echelon quarterback. That's not going to be here in Chicago. It's just not going to happen.
Agreed.
So, no shot.
All right, gentlemen, the Mega Millions jackpot is at $850 million. We as a show group, you two, Meller, myself, JR, and our boss, Mike Thomas, have a show pot, and we've bought a bunch of tickets.
Yep.
Shot or no shot, if we win, 50% of us will be at work here tomorrow.
Well, you won't wake up.
Listen, one time in 15 years, and this is what I get.
He says you'd be dead.
I know I will be here.
I'll be here.
Like, if truly, and I gave the tickets, JR made copies already. If we won tonight, and I looked and go, oh, God, we just won $850 million, and I think the buyout is like $600, something like that.
Wait a minute. What?
it's not like
your app. I don't want to cash out. Like, no, give me my money.
No, after taxes, I think the lump sum payment is like
$600. You could either take where you get paid for the next, like, 20 years.
Bonilla.
Or you could just get one lump sum where they take out all the taxes.
Right.
I want the Bonilla deal.
No, we would take the lump sum.
So
you think the money would dry up at some point? We wouldn't get our full share?
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Pritzker. Let's assume that we win.
Wilma.
And I call you guys, go, it's $125 million a guy. We're in. Done. I'd still come in here and want to do the show every day.
Yeah, I'd be here.
Done. What am I going to do with myself?
Now, this is, well, there's a couple things you could do, but nonetheless.
Put on an apron and go, hey, honey, I made a new recipe today. No.
Oh!
No, I'm going to work. I want to do the show.
Is that a shot of Carm?
No, absolutely not. I don't know. It's a good recipe. I don't know. It's a bad recipe.
Look who's in the kitchen. Look who's in the kitchen. Look who's in the kitchen. I don't know what I'm going to make. It's Carm. Yeah, I'd be here. Absolutely. And 50% of us, I think we'd all be here.
No shot.
Except Meller.
I would be here. Meller wouldn't be here. And
I'd be here the day after.
JR wouldn't be here.
The day after I'd be here. It's a celebration.
I might be completely wasted
2 days
coming
later,
in, but I'd be here.
You'd be broadcasting from home, Jeff. There's no question.
I disagree. The day after, I'd be here. 2 days later, maybe not.
Mellor would be here until Cap handed him his envelope of cash, and then we would never see Mellor again.
I would be here. You could find me in the back of the limo when I arrive.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yes, Mr. Hood, what would you like me to have me waiting with for you?
Oh, absolutely.
Some crown.
Yep. And then next January, I'll still be broadcasting. I'll just be in St. Thomas.
Yeah, exactly.
We got Hoodie's line established from St. Thomas.
What else you got, Danny? What else you
guys,
got?
We got to go to break. Unfortunately, this Kim Kardashian question will wait till tomorrow.
Oh, for...
Wow.
All right.
Nice win for the Bulls last night. Plus, we got to talk about the Tiger documentary, part two.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get to all that. It's coming up next.
Jonathan Hood.
Hello.
Welcome, fans. This is Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 and streaming on the new ESPN Chicago app.
Rolling on, Cap J Hood, ESPN 1000. So the Chicago Bulls gave a game away in OKC. Had it won. I think there's been one instance of a team with a 10-point lead with that amount of time left losing, like in the last 2,500 NBA games in that situation.
And then people were tussling with you on social media over the weekend talking about, you know, same old Bulls, no different from last year. And you said,
right. And you said,
hey, wait a minute, hey, hit the brakes on this, okay? If you know anything about the NBA, and again, some Bulls fans are just focused on their team, but if you know anything about the NBA, Billy Donovan coaches ass off.
Correct.
And it is not Gar Pax. It's a different regime there. You have to take a look at this with a different set of eyes.
Correct. Well said. And so Billy Donovan, he doesn't act like a complete lunatic at the press conference. He simply lays it out. Mm-hmm. And maybe the loss to OKC turns into a blessing in disguise. This team's not winning a title anyway. So everything is about a teaching moment. I still don't believe Coby White is at this time. Can he develop into it? Maybe. But my experience scouting was guys who are combo guards and more interested in scoring rarely become great lead guards. Bulls don't have a lead guard. They need one. That's why I like the Halliburton kid in the draft. But Patrick Williams certainly looks like the upside is massive and he could become a Kawhi Leonard style guy. But the point of the story is, since then, they beat Dallas, they just beat Houston, mm-hmm. and they just look like a different team this year. They're passing the ball. Lauri Markkanen's doing more than just standing at the three-point line having a coach say ridiculous things to him. This is Billy Donovan talking about not knowing how to win. It's a great, great cut that I think you want to hear.
My job is to teach them what goes into winning, you know, as a coach. And you know, I'm not asking, you know, anybody on our team to be anybody but themselves. You know, I think they've all gotten better. They've all made progress. They've all made strides. But I just can't sit there as a coach and just sit there and say, okay, well, this is who you are. Just keep doing what you do and who you are. I mean, I think that would be a terrible mistake and a disservice to the players. I mean, they want to win. They want to win. I mean, this is a hardworking group. It's a good group of guys. They want to win. They don't know how to. You know, they're learning how to. And there's things that, you know, it was interesting. I was like talking to Coby about this a couple games ago, but like we're on a little bit of a run and he's made a couple shots and then like he wants to heat check. We don't need a heat check right now. We're on a run. Like, okay, so it's a long rebound and we break momentum. We've got to understand the things that break momentum. And I still believe we have control over some of the passes that we made, the decisions that we made. We're up 22 or 23 points and we go through a stretch there where it's like, and I thought it happened, to be honest with you, Sam, I thought it happened in the middle of the second quarter, but we made some shots and rebounded, and I think we were up 18 at the half. But they had cut it all the way down to maybe 7 or 8 points with about 4 or 5 minutes to go, and we kind of went on a run to close the second quarter. But the same thing happened in the middle of the third quarter, and these runs or these momentum swings, they just go on for too long. And I've got to try to find a way to help them see the things that are important that they have to do to put themselves in position to win.
Now, since then, the Bulls were able to get it done against, as you mentioned, Dallas and Houston. There was almost a wake-up call for the play, for those players, see? It's so interesting. You know, he sounds like Doug Collins. Doug said the same thing in his toward the end of his tenure with Washington and Detroit. It's like, you guys, it's a players' league. You got, you know, just listen to what I'm telling you, but ultimately it's on you guys, right? But it's different only because Billy's teaching the game. Let me tell you something. 60% of the coaches in the league would have got fired after that press conference. I'm just telling you. He called out Kobe White by name. That doesn't happen in this league. Kobe, you don't need a heat check in this spot. He gave an example. That's the kind of thing that got Doug fired. Because Doug was just telling the truth. Like, hey, I need for our players to play better. I need for them to listen. And I'm glad that Billy stood up. And I mean, there's a guy that's the first year of his contract that has the autonomy to be able to say, hey, we don't need that right now.
Yeah, I'm a huge Doug Collins guy, huge. And he and Billy have a great relationship. Mm-hmm. Billy uses him as a fountain of knowledge from all his years in the league. They talk about different things. That's why it's so great to have Doug in their front office. But I liked, he didn't say, Kobe White's an idiot.
No.
He just said, I talked to Kobe. Before he ever told us, or the fans, he had already talked to Kobe about it and said, and I remember the shot he's talking about.
Yeah.
Bulls hit a couple shots. They're coming up the court. And he never makes a pass. It's watch me dribble, 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 and let me pull up and take a shot just inside the three-point line.
It's my turn, offense. It's my turn.
That doesn't win.
Yeah. It's my turn.
That's why I said this to you before that cut. I like Kobe as a combination guard, coming off the bench type guy. I just don't think he is, at this point, maybe it changes, a lead guard on a championship-caliber team.
Thank goodness the Bulls have some veterans on that squad. Like, you could just plug in a Temple, a Thad Young, a Valentine. That's not a good thing for a young team.
They play hard.
You got veterans there along with the young guys. It's a good mix right now. Again, don't expect the world, but watch the development year after year.
Absolutely, well said. 312-332-3776. Jesse Rogers on what the hell is going on with the Chicago Cubs in 2 minutes.